Today we're starting the Gospel of John. I love the Gospel of John. Of all of four Gospels, it's my favorite. There are some very distinctive things about it. There are some things about John himself that make this the book I always recommend to people who know nothing about the Bible. I always recommend them to read this book first. If you could take one book in the Bible, and if that's all people had, I think the Gospel of John would be enough for you to love Jesus, enough for you to trust Jesus. I always make the promise when we start, it'll take us almost 2 years to get through it. It'll take us probably 6 or 7 weeks to get through chapter one. And I freely confess, with all my studying and everything, it's still way bigger than I am. And I'm sorry that you're limited by that, but we always ask the Lord to give me more brains than I have. We always ask Him to give me more words that are more than just my own. But I always make the promise, if you will seriously look at this with the desire of knowing Jesus, I promise you, you will love Jesus more by the end of this book than you do right now, however much you love Him. He's always better than we think He is. The Gospel of John is unique in a number of different ways, and we probably are only going to get the first couple of verses this morning, and most of the first part of our time I'm going to spend just on the introduction. It's worth doing. You know, we have four Gospels. A lot of people don't understand why there are differences in them. There are not substantial ones, but they are different in the same way that when a whole bunch of us went to see The Passion of the Christ when that movie first came out. And it was so moving. I remember Billy Graham said, he said, I will never be able to read the gospel the same way after watching that movie. But we got together various different groups informally, and we were all talking about the things that impressed us about that movie. We all saw the same movie. I made my living for many years writing orchestrations. That's what I did out in Los Angeles for almost 20 years. And so my first impression of watching a movie almost always is the score. And then I'll have to watch it again for content and camera angles and all of that stuff. But that movie hit so many people in such a visceral way. But it was interesting to see that the visceral way that it hit us was different with each person. Certain things jumped out. All the moms were so touched by Jesus' interaction with Mary. Just different reactions. Same story. We have four Gospels because God believed that we needed to see all of these events from these four different people. Three of them were virtually eyewitness accounts. Luke technically was an eyewitness account, but Luke just gathered research from eyewitnesses and compiled it. He himself was not an eyewitness to the events, at least in Luke. And then in the book of Acts, which is volume 2, he was eyewitness to many of those events. But John wrote this gospel decades later than the other ones. By the time that John wrote this, which I believe firmly was by special request from Jesus himself, John was so old that some people thought he was never going to die. Varying accounts of how old he was, some of the ones that I heard saying he was probably about Gwen's age before she went to heaven last year, in his 90s, perhaps even over 100. The Romans tried to kill him several times. He was stoned once. Almost all of the apostles were martyred. John, they didn't seem to be able to kill. They tried to boil him in oil, which just creeps me out completely. And even that didn't kill him. He did have a great tan after that, but it didn't kill him. Finally, what they did was they feared he was unkillable and the influence that would have, and so they exiled him to basically a hunk of rock called the Island of Patmos. And at the request of the Lord Jesus, he compiled what was the last of the real true eyewitness accounts. By the time he wrote it, all of the other Gospels had circulated for many, many years. People knew the stories. They knew the parables. They knew the miracles. And it's interesting to me that at the time most of the Gospels were written, there were tens of thousands of people still living who were eyewitnesses to the miracles. Of course, the farther that you go down the road, and people didn't live as long as they do today, there were the stories took on legendary proportions. And the farther away from the Jewish world that you got out into the Gentile churches, then there was the influence of pagan religions and all of this stuff where people heard the stories, they did sound too good to be true, and there weren't eyewitnesses really to verify that it actually had happened. And that's probably one of the reasons why John wrote this at the time that he did. I am glad that he did. Because of the character of the other Gospels having already been written, people knowing the stories, John's Gospel is very different. He spends hardly any time on the parables of Jesus. He spends virtually no time on the teaching of Jesus, except primarily the teaching of Jesus about himself. Here's a good thing to note, especially living out here, where so much of what calls itself the church is so liberal. Biblical Christianity is not primarily based on the teaching of Jesus. It isn't the liberal church. In fact, they don't even believe that he was actually telling the truth about who he was. They think the disciples made that up. But they still try to espouse his teaching, love your neighbor, you know, save the polar bears, or, you know, whatever that cause du jour is in the liberal arena. Biblical Christianity isn't primarily based on the teaching of Jesus. It's based on the person of Jesus and what he did, who he was, and what he did. His teaching would have absolutely no validity whatsoever if he lied about who he was. If he said, "I am the Son of God," and he was not, you couldn't trust his teaching. If he said, "I'm the Son of God," because he thought he was the Son of God, like a man who thinks he's a poached egg or something, If he did it because he was delusional, you couldn't trust his teaching. If he's a deceiver and a liar, you couldn't trust his teaching. Biblical Christianity hinges on who Jesus is. One time, years ago, I was invited for Thanksgiving with the family of a friend of mine. She was the only Christian in her family, and her family were very wealthy people from Boston. They owned a string of new and used car dealerships. They were worth $100 million, probably. And when I got there, I was a novelty because I was the second Christian that they knew, besides their daughter. I remember we're sitting around chatting after Thanksgiving dinner, and one of the four brothers said, "Well, aren't you ashamed to be a minister, an evangelical minister, considering all the scandals and the bad reputation that ministers have?" And thank you. Thanks for inviting me for Thanksgiving. No, but you know what? God poured some holy boldness into me that I do not naturally have. And before my brain had a chance to sit to think, I said to them, "Aren't you embarrassed about being in the used car business, considering the reputation that people in that line of work have?" And they got really upset, and they started saying, "We pride ourselves on being honest, and it doesn't matter what kind of a reputation." As soon as they finished that, I said, "There you go." I said, "I have to tell you, I am not a Christian because of church people. I hate all of that same hypocrisy that you hate. I'm a Christian for only one reason, and that's because of who Jesus is. And that's it. I don't think anybody should become a Christian or get their idea of what God is like from church people. You're destined for disillusionment. If you don't know what God's like, look at what Jesus says God's like. You don't know what he had in mind, look at what Jesus said. Jesus said, I don't say anything or do anything except what the Father tells me to do. And if you've seen me, you've seen him. That's either an amazing case of delusion or out and out deception, or it's true. And if it's true, then it needs to be considered. So the fact that John's gospel talks more about who Jesus is, Jesus' personality, you see more clearly in John than the other gospels. We know, most of us, this is the third time I've taught John, but different people here. We know most of the parables. We know most of the miracles. John doesn't worry about that. A lot of people knew about them. But he does spend time talking about part of who Jesus is that needed to be said, lest it all be chalked up to legend, which by the time John wrote, a lot of it was. Who is John? What about him? One of the reasons that I want to study the Gospel of John is because of who John was. Somebody, I think it was Tony, was praying this morning before church about the loose canons that were transformed in Scripture and how comforting that is. And the two I can think of are the one we're studying on Wednesday nights in Galatians, and that's Paul, formerly Saul of Tarsus the Maniac, and John himself. I find it so interesting, the more that I look at how clueless John was, getting to hang out with Jesus for 24/7 for a number of years, and so much of that time clueless and out of sync with him. And yet Jesus prayed all night before he chose these 12 guys. John and his brother James were fishermen, along with partners with Peter and his brother Andrew. When one of them found the Lord, they influenced the others. They were basically just fishermen, blue-collar workers. Those of you that went to Israel in one of our two trips can picture in your mind, remember where the Jesus boat was, that whole end of the Sea of Galilee, and picture where those guys lived. They were friends. They were acquaintances. They didn't all wholeheartedly embrace the Lord immediately, but almost immediately. They dropped everything and followed him. John was one of the people that did. But you know what? They were a work in progress for a long time. John was one of Jesus's closest friends if you listen to him. And all through this gospel, John never uses his own name. When he refers to John, as we're going to read, and when we get to the part we're going to read this morning, he is referring to John the Baptist. But he never calls himself by name. He calls himself the disciple that Jesus loved. There's two ways you can look at that. As we go through this, you're going to see that John and Peter had this competitive thing. Maybe it went all the way back to when they were in high school. Maybe it was, business partners, my boat can catch more fish than your boat. But they had this competitive thing. In John's gospel, for instance, when he records the empty tomb after the resurrection, and, Peter and John ran to the tomb, John adds, "And I won." And you think, John, why do we need to know that you can run faster than Peter? Come on. But it's a guy thing. And to be fair, remember when Jesus predicted to Peter the manner in which he was going to suffer and die? First words out of Peter's mouth were, he pointed at John, he says, "What about him? What does he have to suffer? If I got to suffer, I want to know what he has to suffer." There was this thing that went back and forth. You'll see it all the way through here. I find that comforting as well. James and John were two of the boys that were in the shoving match as to who was going to be vice president when Jesus took over. Just totally clueless. These were the guys that wanted to smoke the Samaritans. And I don't mean, you know, hey, would you like a Samaritan? Here, you know, light up. And no, these are the guys that wanted to torch the whole country of Samaria just because they didn't like Samaritans. They're on their way to Jerusalem. Jesus is going to die for the sins of the world. And Peter and John say, Lord, would you like us to perhaps call fire down from heaven and just torch this whole country? You moms will understand completely the look that was on Jesus' face when he looked at them and he said, guys, when you talk like that, you have no idea what spirit you're of. It's like he's saying, you think I think that way? You think that would make me happy? That's how out of it they were. Jesus, who was the perfect judge of character. In fact, in Matthew, I believe it's chapter 25, it says Jesus knew what was in a man. He didn't have to be told what was in a man. Perfect judge of character. Jesus called James and John the sons of thunder. Thunder boys. And in that culture, we saw this last Wednesday night when we talked about Barnabas. The word Barnabas means son of encouragement. It was a nickname. When you said son of something, you were not talking about the character of the mother or the father. You were talking about the characteristic of this person's personality. Barnabas was named son of encouragement because he was always encouraging people. So why do you suppose these guys were named the sons of thunder? Not necessarily because Zebedee, their father, had a fiery personality. It was because this is the kind of guys that they were. They were sort of hot-headed. They were both disciples of John the Baptist, who was also a little bit hot-headed if you compared John the Baptist's ministry with Jesus's ministry. And they were followers of John the Baptist, even believing that John the Baptist could be the Messiah. He certainly fit the Jewish picture of Messiah better than Jesus did. Even John was confused. John the Baptist was confused from prison. Remember, he said his disciples to Jesus and said, look, this is not going down the way we thought it was going to go down. I don't see any Roman heinies being kicked out of town here. It seems like the wrong people hate you, Jesus, and the wrong people love you. This is not the hopey changey thing that we were all hoping for. And John was sent word. John the Baptist was sent word from Jesus. Just tell him. And then he quoted scripture, I believe from Isaiah 61, about the mission of Messiah. So these guys had the wrong perspective about who even Messiah was from the get-go. And the only reason they stopped following John the Baptist was because John the Baptist told them to start following Jesus. It took a while for them to get on the same page with him, which once again I find so comforting. Remember I told you that if you look at John's gospel, John seems to think he was Jesus' favorite. But if you want to be fair about it, they all thought they were Jesus' favorite. You know why they thought that? It's thrilling. It's because Jesus treated each one of them like they were his favorite, just like he treats you, and he treats me that way. They all thought that they were his favorite, and yet when he told them there at the Last Supper, one of you is going to betray me, every stinking one of them thought, is it me? I've always found that so delightful. Jesus says, one of you guys is going to rat me out, and every one of them, without exception, says, is it me? Notice none of them looked at Judas. None of them thought it was Judas, except Judas. Which means that Jesus had to have treated Judas no differently which is way different than us, isn't it? If you knew somebody was going to rat you out in a moment of crisis, you'd avoid them, wouldn't you? I mean, that's our self-protective instinct. Jesus didn't treat Judas any differently. In fact, the last two times we see him interacting with Judas, he calls him friend. One while he was in the act of betraying him. So I would study the Gospel of John just because of who John was, because this same guy, this same thunder boy, this same clueless guy, out of touch, completely more male than holy, for most of the record that we see, spent the greater portion of his life called the Apostle of Love, which I always think needs Barry White's voice with reverb saying, the Apostle of Love. What could possibly transform somebody from flaky, hot-headed thunder boy to the Apostle of Love? It's worth considering. Because, see, I'm hoping that Jesus will take me as I am and change me. So every time I have an opportunity to watch that process happen in somebody's life, it's thrilling to me and it gives me great hope. The thing that transformed John from Thunder Boy, hothead, religious zealot, member of the original Palestinian Liberation Organization, into the Apostle of Love, was that he just hung out with Jesus. That's what changed him. I do find it interesting, as I said, that Jesus called these guys. He prayed all night before he picked them. Any of you who grew up in Sunday school know the song Peter, James, and John in the Sailboat? Out on the deep blue sea, and the rains came. You know that one? No, that's, I'm getting my two songs mixed up. Peter, James, and John in the Sailboat. No, Peter, James, and John, right? The three fabulous godly men who Jesus kept with him at all times. Peter, James, and John were the three problem children. If you study all four Gospels, you realize those were the three who were always getting in trouble. The Samaritan smokers, the fighters, the shoving match who gets to be vice president. I'm more spiritual than you are, boys. If you have more than one child, you understand. This transformed my way of thinking because I grew up Peter, James, and John. You know, hey, they've got their pictures in stained glass windows. They had to be special, right? But the reason why John and Peter and James were included in some events that the other disciples were not is the same reason why if you have a child that's a little bit more unruly, shall we say, than the others, that's the one you want to keep with you. Okay, you two, you're okay. You come with me. I was at a pastor's conference once. I believe it was down in at Sandy Cove down in Maryland. One of my favorite Bible teachers got up in front of 800 guys, and he was talking about this, and right in the middle of it, he put his Bible down. He says, come on, guys, be honest. The reason that you and I are in the ministry right now is because Jesus can't take his eyes off of us. We can't be trusted to just be out there on our own. So he gave us something to do that requires that we stay with him at all times.